I feel like what we're really doing is we're reclaiming childhoods with the homeschool movement. And that excites me so much. It's because we're seeing what society is starting to do. We're seeing the ramifications of a childhood that is riddled with all this busyness and stress and anxiety and pressures. And we're thinking, okay, this isn't really working anymore.
Welcome to Homeschool Conversations with Humility and Doxology, a series of interviews with real-life homeschool moms, dads, and other educators on all sorts of topics that affect our lives as homeschool parents. I'm Amy Sloan, a second-generation homeschool mom of five, and I am so delighted that you are here. Here on Homeschool Conversations, we'll discuss educational philosophy, family life, and more. Come chat with us. Now let's hear from podcast sponsor and Sloan family favorite, Mr. D himself from Mr. D Math.
Does your child love math, surpassing your ability to teach them? Or maybe you have a child struggling in math and you're looking for a solution that will help them finally get it. You want your teen to understand, love, and enjoy their math curriculum. Is that too much to ask? At Mr. D Math, we've got you covered. Many times a young person says they hate math simply because it hasn't been explained in a way that makes sense to them. At Mr. D Math, our teachers are dedicated to providing accessible support, instructing with clarity, and making math fun. We work with students from around the world, helping connect educational concepts to their everyday lives and exposing them to endless possibilities and potential for their futures. Head to MrDMath.com to check out our live and self-paced course options for math, life skills, test prep, and more. We even have courses to get your child ready for high school math or help them catch up or get ahead in a semester or less. Go to MrDMath.com or click the link in the show notes to see how Mr. D Math can bring clarity and joy to your homeschool.
Hello, friends. Today I am joined by Christy Faith. And if you haven't met her yet, it is only a matter of time. Though she may be newer to the homeschool space, her experience in homeschooling and education spans over 20 plus years with a background in K to college academics and administration. This has allowed her to emerge as a social media powerhouse with over 300,000 followers and multi-millions of video views. Every day, she expertly debunks homeschooling myths and motivates countless moms, both new and veteran homeschoolers, to take the leap, remain steadfast, and revitalize their purpose. As Christy embraces this new calling to support homeschool moms, she channels her expertise as a teacher's teacher into her membership platform, Thrive Homeschool Community. Here, moms can find expert advice, unwavering support, and a true sense of belonging. And she has a book coming out, Spring 2024. So it's going to be called Homeschool Rising, Shattering Myths, Finding Courage, and Opting Out of the School System. Phew, well, there is your like official bio. But Christy, I first started following you on Instagram a while back now. I love your Reels content. There's plenty that's funny and brings a much needed laugh and levity to the homeschool life. But there's also a lot of meaningful, deep, thoughtful content as well. So I'm really excited to get a chance to get to know you a little bit more. Here at the beginning, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you guys got started homeschooling?
Sure, I'd love to. Amy, thank you so much for having me on when you asked me. It was a yes before you could even finish your sentence. So thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be getting to know you and to talk about my love and my calling, which is homeschooling and feeding and nurturing the homeschool mom. So to answer your question as to how our family got into homeschooling, it's a little strange because we have been homeschooling a very long time because we homeschooled other people's kids before our own at our center. We had a boutique learning center and educational consulting firm in Southern California. We had that business for 17 years. And during the day, we homeschooled kids. Some of those kids were homeschooling for a temporary reason. They were moving. We actually had some children whose parents had some grave medical diagnoses and they wanted more time with their children. So they came to us for the bare basics so that they could be with family during some end of life stuff. We had professional athletes. We had a surfer, we had an ice skater, we also had several child actors. So there were a lot of reasons in our space where we were in our little boutique learning center why families were turning to homeschooling. But I will say that none of those reasons were philosophical. So it was extremely utilitarian. There were reasons why. And that was the train I was on. I was so happy to help these families and to help them homeschool during a temporary period because we don't want the kids to be socially awkward and we don't want to mess them up and they got to get matriculated back into school at some point. So we were solving a very real need in helping families. But it wasn't until our homeschooling started to grow where I thought, I think that there's something to this and families are getting curious about homeschooling. Maybe I should educate myself a little bit more on the homeschool space. And so I started to go to conferences and I started to read some of the homeschool intellectuals that are out there. And I would say that there's a few people where after their first talk that I either heard on a podcast or went to a conference and heard or read, my mind was blown. Here I was in education for my entire career and hadn't even heard of another pedagogy. There's 9 pedagogies. There's 9. So, and I only knew traditional, which is fine. We can homeschool in the traditional style. That's perfectly fine. But when I particularly heard the classical scholars, I just was enamored by it. And I remember going to one particular conference and coming back and telling Scott, my husband, I think we should homeschool our kids. And then that kind of coincided with somewhat of a deconstruction, I would say. That's kind of the word that I use. It's a trendy word, but people understand that word right now. And so, you know, it's when you believe in some sort of a system and then all of a sudden you feel like scales are lifted and you're like, what am I doing here? What kind of a player am I in this? And that started to happen, I would say, several years before I started actively pursuing homeschool philosophy. And I would just look around and these kids were at school all day, then coming to our centers. A lot of these families, we had arrangements where they came after school with dinner in hand and they couldn't leave until we called mom. It's like, when were they? And then on the weekends, a lot of these kids were in highly rigorous private schools and or they were really struggling learners and maybe placed in the wrong school. So they need a lot of extra help. And I just started to look around and say, what kind of childhood is this? And that's really and that question still fascinates me. And I hope later on in the podcast, we get to talk about that a little bit, because I feel like what we're really doing is we're reclaiming childhoods with the homeschool movement. And that excites me so much. And that's why it's appealing to people beyond religious motivations, or that's why so many working homeschool moms are out there now. It's because we're seeing what society is starting to do. We're seeing the ramifications of a childhood that is riddled with all this busyness and stress and anxiety and pressures. And we're thinking, you know, okay, this isn't really working anymore. So that's how we ended up homeschooling our own family.
You look at some of those things and you think there has to be a better way. And for a long time, a lot of people kind of like you thought, well, I guess this is just the way things are done. So it's exciting to hear how you were able to come and find a new and better way for your children to reclaim their childhood. I love that. Well, so that was a huge shift in your thoughts about education before you began homeschooling. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed any changes in your approach to homeschooling or your thoughts about philosophy of education in the years since you actually began homeschooling your own children?
Yes. And this is everyone's story, right? We start out a certain way. And as we progress through our years of homeschooling, I joke with my friends often where every mom ends up eclectic. So kind of, right? You know, we're all bent towards some philosophies are appealing to us, but I feel like the longer we homeschool, the more we're comfortable in our own skin, right? So, but yes, so in the beginning, I would say that the scholarly vibe of the classical style was irresistible to me. It really was. Oh my goodness, these kids are trained in logic and rhetoric and they're learning Latin. And why are they learning Latin? Should my kid be learning Latin? And all of these things. And although I still consider myself at the core a classical homeschooler, I entered that space for all the wrong reasons because I was bringing in this mindset, and we all have this, we've all, not you because you're second gen, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Well, all of the rest of us, Amy, we are coming to this only knowing one way that education is supposed to look. I think that's why classical is appealing to a lot of new homeschool moms because it provides a structure and a path and a roadmap for all 12 years. And you can easily buy a system and implement the system. So that's kind of what I did in the beginning is I was just, I'm a classical homeschooler and we're doing this and we're joining this and we're using this curriculum. And although I still do consider myself classical, I feel I've been humbled and I regret the reasons why I did some of the things that I did. You know, working my old, we all have those regrets with our oldest. I hope I'm not the only one.
Oh no, I constantly remind my older children. I'm like, I know that you are frustrated because you've never done this before, but I've never done this before either. So I'm sorry in advance.
Yes. So I've just come to view educating my children and classical education in general as a lot more of a posture rather than a procedure. And that's how I approach now. I think if someone was to look at my life from the outside looking in, they would probably call me eclectic. I would consider myself maybe a rebellious classical homeschooler. Maybe, I don't know. You know, I have the Charlotte Mason flair. That's how I love to do history with living books. I love nature study. I have a very casual relationship with science up until pretty late, maybe later than most people are comfortable with. So yeah, I've changed and evolved along the way. And then there's some subjects that you just need to get done. And this does not need to be fun or fancy. You just open up the book and do it. Let's go.
Okay. I love a rebellious classical educator. I'm going to have to, maybe I'll add that to my list. I call myself a restful classical educator, but I like the rebel in you. That's very fun.
Well,
I think with classical education, a lot of times people can come in with this performance kind of mentality where we're going to like create some great child who can rattle off a bunch of facts and really impress everyone with what a good job we're doing as a homeschooler. And that is a really unhealthy approach to education, to the parent-child relationship. And it really doesn't do any good for our own hearts as moms either. Because either, you know, it puffs up and you become really proud in yourself, or you get really insecure because, wow, things aren't quite turning out the way I hoped. And so that's just an unhealthy way to approach any philosophy of education. But perhaps that particular tendency can especially occur within classical circles.
And as you were talking, you know what else I was reminded of, which makes classical education appealing to a new homeschooler, is your kid can rattle off all these facts. And then the naysayers in your life can view that as, oh, okay. Oh, fine. Those kids are learning something. Okay. So it's also a way to manage the naysayers in our lives too. And so, but I don't want that to discount the beauty and the value of what a classical education is. So, but I, you know, all of the styles I'll have their pitfalls, right? So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what have been a few of your favorite parts of homeschooling?
My favorite parts of homeschooling have nothing to do with academics. For me, it's about the connection that I have with my family. One thing I cherish is that we've created a lifestyle for our family where we have a collective family narrative. I feel like, and as I was doing research for my book, this was very much confirmed, that we live in a society where everyone in a family can live an entirely separate life, kids included. And the only time you have collective memories are when you go on vacation twice a year. And that's just not something I wanted for my family. Friends come and go, people move. We know this, relationships change, but family, you know, who are you going to call when, you know, mom's old and gray? You're going to call a sibling. And my family of origin, not my husband's, but my family of origin, has a lot of brokenness in it. Not my two parents, but their extended families. And those relationships with the siblings they make me sad, and they actually make my parents sad as well. And we just wanted to reclaim that and have a different story for our own family. A lot of our homeschool day is caring for one another, being attuned to one another. When one child has a big event in their life, we go as a family. We do it all together. And I really cherish that. I love that. I could go on and on about what I love about homeschooling. But if I had to boil it down, I think it has to do with that family connection.
That's one of the reasons why in our homeschool structure, we start the day with our morning time routine, and we have mm-hmm. shared books that we're reading together across the ages, and beautiful poetry that we're memorizing together across the ages, and scripture and Shakespeare and all these things. And it's like the inside jokes that knit hearts yes. together. You have a shared family culture, a shared family language, the thing that just makes our family unique. And another family mm-hmm. will have a different set of shared, you know, values and cultural kind of inside jokes, mm-hmm. so to speak, but that makes their family unique. And I think that's mm-hmm. such a beautiful part of homeschooling, especially mm-hmm. when you have children in different grades and a wide age range like mine. You know, there's very little time that they would be spending together in a traditional school setting. So mm-hmm. I'm thankful that they have the opportunity to really build those sibling bonds here mm-hmm. at home.
Yeah. And that also reminds me, this is a tangent, but we're okay with that here, right?
Oh, totally. The rabbit trail is the point.
Okay, great. Perfect. We'll be good friends. What that reminds me of, you know, we send our kids to schools where they are age segregated and adult led. Then we send them to extracurricular activities, gymnastics, basketball, baseball, whatever. They're not bad, but they're also adult led and largely age segregated. Maybe there's a little bit more of a wider, but still. Birthday parties on the weekend, age segregated. And so I think that our society, I would just love for one, parents to rethink that. And is all of that living the separate life, every person in the family living a separate life, is that healthy? And just consider how that plays into what socialization is and what is healthy socialization, and ask themselves that question. But the second thing is that the homeschool moms listening, I want that to encourage you, because when you actually look at the data behind age segregation of children, you realize that that's actually a pretty unhealthy structure. And it was created not for the best interest of children. It was created to be able to educate masses of children. And be encouraged by that. Be encouraged that you don't have to buy into the lie that kids can only interact with other kids their age. That also, I also have quite a large age span of children, and we do a morning time and read aloud. I remember about a year ago, we were reading Prairie Thief again. How many times have you read? All right, we love Prairie Thief. And all of my children were in the backyard playing pretend Prairie Thief. All ages, they were all, and if they were all in separate books, separate curriculum, separate everything, they wouldn't have that ability to play pretend in that way together and know the characters to be and dress up and all of that. So it's a very special, encouraging piece of homeschooling, I think, being together as a family.
Definitely. Oh, I love that story. I've seen that with my own children in the past. Yeah. And as a mom, don't you just like, I'm happy and I might cry and it's just so yes. beautiful.
Yes.
Okay, so we have these like happy, blissful moments, the children playing pretend together. But that's not really all the story, right, Christy?
What do you mean, Amy?
just maybe there might be some hard moments of homeschooling. So what are some of the challenges you faced in your homeschool and how have you sought to overcome those challenges?
So I could go into specifics all day long about my challenges, but I would say the largest challenge for me, and I think a lot of homeschool moms, is getting out of our heads, getting out of our own way. And it reminds me of, I don't know if you've heard of the sociologist Alan Bloom, and he talks about that parents have lost the idea that the highest aspiration for their children is for them to be wise. And he says, like, priests and prophets and philosophers are wise, but parents have now settled for just competence and worldly success. And that's all that parents can really imagine. And that's all that parents think an education is nowadays. And so when I get out of my head and embrace and tell myself the truth that an education is way more than vocational training, and that a happy human being does not mean that they make a lot of money. In fact, there's probably a lot of research to say otherwise, that my self-doubt starts to go away a lot more. But, and then on a practical way, on a day-to-day basis, I get dysregulated very easily with noise and visual clutter. And that's just a practical day-to-day challenge that I personally have with four kids and a busy house and laundry and working and wait, you have to eat again. So
my teen daughter was recently recommending the use of what she called doom boxes, where if you don't have time to actually clean things, you just put things in your doom box. So at least all the clutter is like contained in one space. So I was like, well, that sounds like a great idea. You should implement that in your bedroom.
I really like that idea.
Yeah, I like the name for sure.
Yes. Yes.
How do we homeschool preschool? One of the most common questions I see in the online homeschooling space comes from excited mamas eager to find the best curriculum for homeschooling their preschoolers. I remember well that eager feeling as a new mom. It's so thrilling to see all the books and possibilities out there. But what if your best tool for homeschooling preschool is changing your perspective, not buying a curriculum? What if the best homeschool preschool curriculum doesn't come in a box or a textbook? What if you don't have to plan dozens of projects? What if there is a natural, peaceful, and productive way to pursue preschool at home? Head to humilityanddoxology.com to learn how I've homeschooled preschool for my five children, and I've never bought a pre-made preschool curriculum. Oh, Christy, I know, especially as you were working in more a traditional academic kind of sphere, and then you were coming to all these changing thoughts about homeschooling, and now you're working with homeschoolers and you're doing research for your book. I'm sure you've come up with a lot of common misconceptions that people have about homeschooling or maybe homeschoolers. So what are some of those common misconceptions and why do you think people are mistaken?
Oh my goodness. There's so many. Your kid will be socially awkward. Your kid is sheltered. Your kid's not ready for the real world. How are they going to get into college? Wait, well, you need an accredited transcript or you need this, you need that. Homeschool moms are more patient than all the other moms.
Have you met me?
I know. That's what I say. So, I mean, where do you want me to start? What do you think is the hardest misconception or what do you think is the hardest one to get for us to get past as homeschool moms?
You know, it's really interesting because In the area where I live in North Carolina, homeschooling is really common. And so I don't actually remember the last time in my real life I ever heard someone ask me a question about socialization. But I know from talking to other people who live in different regions of the country, that's still very, very common and a real struggle they have to deal with. So of course, you know, that's the joke. Everybody brings that one up. I think also this idea that they aren't going to be prepared for the real world is a common misconception. So there are two to start with. What do you think about those?
Well, yeah, let's start with socialization. I view homeschool socialization in a different light than a lot of people. I feel like, and homeschool moms listening, I want you to stop playing defense and I want you to start playing some offense here. Because one, we have the statistics on our side, and I don't mean offense, playing offense in a mean way or a judgy way or not having empathy or humility, nothing like that. What I mean is step into these shoes, step into truth. And the truth is that homeschooled kids are light years. They score on tests and evaluations, emotionally, psychologically, socially. They are healthier than schooled kids, both private school kids and public school kids. So in terms of just simple statistics, you know, my book is full of them too. I have an entire chapter on socialization. But here's the thing that I think is important for us to embrace is that one, we need to accept the fact that there is a collective mindset in our culture with a stigma for that all homeschoolers are socially awkward or they aren't going to be prepared or they're not going to fit in or whatever. And I think that all of us have faced the fact where someone says, oh, I want to homeschool. I'm just so worried about socialization. And then you ask them, well, what worries you? And then they describe it. And they're literally describing your homeschool life, which is very social and rich and all of that. And then you end the conversation and their mindset's not changed. I think that there is this confirmation bias in our society. It's kind of like you see an awkward kid and just out at the mall and you're like, oh, that kid's a little awkward. Okay. And then you see the next week, you see another kid and you find out they're homeschooled and you're, oh, they're awkward because they're homeschooled. And I'm thinking to myself, have you met a middle schooler lately? Like, come on.
They're all a little awkward. You know,
but it's a natural human tendency. And this isn't a way homeschool moms can have grace with other people because we have confirmation bias too. We are naturally wired to look for evidence that supports what we want to believe. And it's really hard to break that mindset, which is one of the things that I'm extremely passionate about. And the other piece to the socialization aspect that I think is really important to embrace is that if our homeschooled kids have a completely different academic life and a completely different social life than kids who are schooled, why do we want them to look the same? Why would they look the same? Their entire life is so different than a child who is in a school. That makes people uncomfortable. It really does. And I think if I was to guess, because I overthink everything, but I think this has a lot to do with, and I'd be curious about your opinion as a second gen. When we grew up in the school system, the worst possible thing that could happen to us is to not fit in. Homeschoolers, it's very much a culture of being yourself and being in your own skin and quirky's cool and all of that. And so when an outsider might see a homeschool kid that doesn't present the same, my kids are not, you know, my son learns Latin. So someone from the outside could be, oh, that kid's so weird. He was talking about Latin. No, that kid's not weird. That kid just thinks Latin is cool. And I think that that's something to really consider is that the worst possible thing that could happen to us socially growing up in school was to not fit in. It was a recipe for rejection and bullying and all of that. And so in a way, we're scared. We're scared that that homeschooler maybe presents a little bit differently or talks about Tolstoy and not TikTok. And that makes us a little bit uncomfortable. You know, my son is I get remarks all the time from neighbors where he will play with a four-year-old in the neighborhood, and then I'll see him chit-chatting with a grandparent across the way. There's no stigma for him. So in terms of just a different approach to viewing socialization, I hope that encourages mamas just to understand our society, and that it's very, I think it's very much a fear-based response, to be honest, that other people have about socialization. And when we understand that, I think we'll get less frustrated and we'll roll our eyes less, like, oh, they're so ignorant. Like, you know, we were there too. I was there. You probably weren't. So I want to turn that over to you based on what I said. I'm so curious from your perspective. I know this is a podcast interviewing me, but I'm more interested in you right now.
I think that from my experience, being a little quirky and different, being outside the box was not something to be ashamed of, but totally a badge of honor. It was more like, yeah, I don't want to fit in with your box. You know, I want to be my own person. And that's carried over. Even now, I see how that really solid foundation and the confidence that I didn't have to fit inside the box, mm-hmm. that I didn't have to be just like everyone else, mm-hmm. actually helps me as a homeschool mom, because homeschool moms, we can create our own boxes. Oh. And, you know, if you're not XYZ enough for this group of people, then, well, you don't get to be called this brand of homeschooling anymore, or whatever it is, you know. And so yeah. just to know, like, you know what, I can take the principles and then apply them in a unique way for my mm-hmm. own family, that does not scare me or bother me. And so I think that's a real gift, actually. Mm-hmm. The unsocialized homeschooler in me helps me, actually, as I raise my own children now. It gives me confidence in knowing it's going to be okay.
Well, people like you give us confidence, because there is I've noticed this across the board. Every homeschool graduate I've ever met, whether they're second gen or they were homeschooled themselves and they don't have kids yet or whatever, you guys have a peace and a security in when you guys decide to homeschool that a lot of us attain to have. And so I get hungry when I meet a second gen homeschool mom. I just cling on and I ask her all sorts of questions, or even dads, because there really is this, you guys already know it's going to be okay because you're okay. So there's that too, right?
And we know that you don't have to be a perfect homeschool parent for yes. things to turn out okay, because we were right. there when our parents weren't perfect, you know, yeah. And you know, we turned out okay. Because I think we do, as homeschool moms, we put this pressure on ourselves to, like, we have to do it all right, or we're going to ruin the children forever. You know, we dramatize it. It just becomes such yeah. this huge fear in our hearts. So, yes. yeah.
And we catastrophize the future. I remember, you know, if he doesn't start this year of math, then college is blown, right? And he was five. It's just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, man. I remember, like, literally in tears when one of my children was five. And I was like, oh, and this happened, and then this happened, and he's probably going to end up in prison.
Yes!
Like, what did I just say? That's such a crazy thing. Every five-year-old probably looks occasionally like they're heading to prison.
Yes. And if you're a mom listening to this, and you've never thought that, had a thought in your head, oh my goodness, will I be bailing this kid out of jail? Then, yeah.
Then I'm very happy for you. I will just mention before we move to the next question, I yes. did a series where I actually interviewed a bunch of second generation homeschoolers and a bunch of early homeschoolers, sort of from my parents' generation, and just really got their perspectives. And so that's over at the Curriculum Choice website, and I'll put the link to that in the show notes. So
oh, I would love yeah, to watch that.
I will send that to you.
Yeah. Okay. Wonderful. Thank you.
Well, we've kind of talked about this a little bit, Christy, and I hope that anyone listening who's considering homeschooling is already feeling encouraged by what you've shared. But if you were talking to a parent and they're facing maybe naysayers in their life or mm-hmm. their own internal doubts, what would you want to say to that homeschooler, that potentially homeschooler?
Well, there's a couple things. So when I am asked this a lot on my lives, my mother-in-law is not supportive, my mom, my friend, my sister, or my husband, I separate the naysayers into two categories. And this tends to be helpful. One, you have your spouse. That's a whole separate category because I can talk about that too, but there are some, you know, your spouse needs to be listened to. You are in a marriage, you're in a relationship. There's real fears you need to talk. So I have kind of a go-to like 8 or 9 things that I suggest that you can try when you're in conversations with your spouse about homeschooling your kids or potentially homeschooling. Now, for friends and family, what I usually recommend is to, and this is going to sound, maybe this will sound bad, but you kind of have to do it. You have to separate each person into one of two categories. And that is, do they have a growth mindset or do they not? Because I think that will help you set boundaries as to the conversations that you are willing and able to have. Willing and able, because for example, what if one of those big naysayers in your life is a total narcissist? Well, there's nothing you can say that will change their mind about your homeschooling choice. So that is a person that you will just need to learn how to set healthy boundaries with. Whereas someone else who maybe is a concerned grandparent and homeschooling is new to them and they're worried. They're worried the kids won't end up okay, because keep in mind, we have a collective mindset in our culture, really somewhat against homeschooling. And for someone like that, that truly does want what's best for you and the kids, it's really just a matter of time before they come on board. You know, when they want, you can hand them information, you can hand them books, send them to websites, ask them to read stuff, invite them over, invite other homeschooling families over and invite them over as well. And I have found in my experience, I don't know about you, but for those people who have concerns at first and they witness it happening, they end up falling in love with homeschooling and thinking it's the best thing ever. But on the other side of that coin is be very careful to protect yourself against those people who don't want what's best for you and don't want what's best for your kids. They just want to, for their own perhaps mental health reasons, they are not able to budge. I would just say set healthy boundaries and love them still and have empathy and grace. I'm a big believer that boundaries aren't a way to block people off and be vindictive. Boundaries are actually a way to salvage relationships and to keep them healthy. Yeah. So I kind of separate into like spouses over here and then friends and family are over here. And then the other thing is to keep in mind is that, and Dr. Stephen Hayes, he's a psychologist or a psychiatrist, I can't recall, but he's kind of coined the term that we have to learn to talk to the ants. And I love that imagery because we have society telling us this, our in-laws, our aunts and uncles, and then we have the voices in our own head. And I love what he's really kind of pioneered this idea of what is a biblical idea of taking our thoughts captive. I think that we're getting better as a society and as moms to set boundaries with other people, like saying yes to the things we want to, and sometimes we have to say no. The one area, at least in my life, that I'm a little slower on the growth plan is having a healthy relationship with my own thought life and taking lies captive and calling them the lies that they are and not reacting and getting overly emotional by thoughts that I've just created in my own head, and to try to focus on my values and what I care about the most. So
that's so helpful. I think so often we do tell ourselves stories, and the more we tell that story in our own mind, if it's a true story, then that's helpful. But if it's a false story, a false narrative that we just sort of keep telling us this version of our life, oh, if I do this, it's not going to work out or whatever. Mm-hmm. A lot of times that becomes the way we view reality, and that's not very, very healthy at all. Mm-mm. But I will say too, with you were saying, you know, sometimes people are initially concerned about a decision to homeschool and later change their mind. That was, you know, it's definitely something that my own parents experienced. I mean, they were homeschooling back when it wasn't quite as popular or well known as it is now. One of my grandmothers in particular was very concerned, but later on, she was a huge advocate, a huge support, because she had seen the results. She just loved us, right? And so she wanted what was best for her grandchildren. And so when she saw it going so well, she became the person that would defend homeschooling to its critics. So,
wonderful. Were you in the generation, I don't know what state you grew up in, but did your mom keep you inside until three?
No. So thankfully I was not quite in the time where it was like still not quite legal or it was a little murky. We definitely like you would get some side eye if you were out during school hours. Like, why aren't you in school today? But it wasn't something where we would get in trouble. So thankfully.
And of course, our kids embarrass us. I don't go to school. They always say the wrong thing. I'm like, stop. Okay, we're done with school already.
I know, exactly. Exactly.
Now my son does it on purpose just to get my goat. But you know what?
Oh, yes.
Good thing social media has made me completely with the thick, very thick skin. So I don't care what other people think anymore.
You're like, hey, I'm on social media. I can handle a tween or teen. You know,
you think you can touch me? I'm on Instagram.
Have you wondered how to celebrate Thanksgiving during your homeschool morning time? Do you want to learn more about the history and culture of Thanksgiving, enjoy fun memory work, singing, and read alouds, but you don't know where to start? We'll start with my Thanksgiving morning time plans and resource pack. I have a suggested morning time schedule and parent guide, several pages of printable memory work, book lists, suggestions for optional hands-on projects, and other Thanksgiving homeschool resources. Head to humilityanddoxology.com/shop to get your Thanksgiving morning time plan resource pack.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so Christy, we're talking to some homeschooling moms, and maybe they started off this semester strong, and now things are just sort of, they're having a freak out moment, right? Mm-hmm. They're worried, am I failing my kids? Or the curriculum that they thought was going to be the perfect curriculum choice that was going to solve all their problems is not working out so well for them this fall. Okay. So what is your best strategy for helping a homeschool mom a meltdown calm down? And then are there times where it's good to pivot in the middle of the year or times when it's maybe better to just push on through?
Yes. The answer is yes to both, right? It all depends. But I feel like, and this might be why this is my most popular workshop that I teach. I teach a Finding Your Why workshop. I think that is the missing piece to homeschool insecurity, is truly knowing your why. Because when you know that, and you'd be surprised, a lot of people homeschool and they know it's the right thing for their family. They know what style they are. They know all the things. But if they don't truly have encapsulated their reasons, their why, you can get derailed. And we all have fallen into this trap where we see all the moms on Instagram and we're looking at 10 different homeschool moms. And then somehow we've meshed her into one big one. And then that's the one that we're now holding ourselves against and judging ourselves against. But I have found that when I am very clear on my purpose, that during the hard days, I can go back to that purpose statement and I can remember why I am doing this. And if my kids were in school, they'd have bad days too. And I'd have bad days. And when you truly know your purpose, you know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that you are the perfect and only person for this job, that no one else can do this job like you can. No one is going to know your kid like you can. No one is going to love your kid like you can. No one is going to be able to pivot. No one is going to be able to hug your kid when they can't sound out that word, right? They can't even touch kids in public school, which I don't mind. But I really think that's it, because we have those ups and downs. And the one thing I'm always saying to my mamas is it's not a curriculum that works. It's not a style that works. It's none of that. It's you that works. it's homeschooling that works. And the reason why homeschooling works is because we're this massive tribe of moms who care and are motivated. It's really ultimately us who are making this work, because you know this, all homeschool curriculum's great. Like, all of it does the job. So it's not a matter of what we're doing. It's more of who we are. And just remembering that when it gets hard, or when you, and the thing is, say we've all done this. We've all, oh man, I love it when curriculum boxes come in the smell, when I crack open that fresh binding and I take that whiff and it's like the smell of hopes and dreams. And then three weeks in, my son and I look at each other and we're like, we hate this curriculum, right? And so just keep in mind, give yourself space. Don't panic. Give yourself time to maybe, we ended up scrapping that whole subject for the whole year. I just didn't buy anything new because our days were full anyway. We'll get to it later. But have grace with yourself that you don't have to scramble and, you know, be up at 2 a.m. researching curriculum. You can take a breather, figure out what's working, what didn't work about that, what did. Get advice from veteran homeschool moms. Listen to Amy's podcast because you're so wise. I've been enjoying listening to your episodes, by the way.
Thank you. I think it's so important to remember that end goal in mind. In my free homeschool planning guide, I talk to people about the four questions you ask before you even think about planning or buying a curriculum. And one of the questions is just like, what kind of human being do I want to raise? And
that's not necessarily
like an academic necessarily goal, but things like humble or kind, full of wonder, you know, those kinds of things. And so if you can even think about big picture, we're dealing with a soul here, an eternal soul in our home. And so the relationship that I have with that child at the end of the day is a whole lot more valuable than whether, you know, we finish this one particular math worksheet on a random Tuesday, you know, in the middle of the semester. And so if we can also just sort of keep that in mind, it goes like really prioritizing relationship. And we talk about that, and, you know, it's easy to say, and I know it is hard to do, but I think if we can really prioritize that human being that's right in front of us, it's not all the other children in the world, it's that child that God gave to us in our homeschool, all their quirks and our quirks, and just focus on that person, I think sometimes that brings some clarity too, and helps the math tiers or this curriculum that's not working or scheduling issue be put back in its proper perspective.
Yes. And we are constantly comparing ourselves. Like, somehow if they were in a school environment that this wouldn't be happening. Like, there's massive gaps. I was in the classroom, massive gaps in learning. I mean, there are some great teachers out there, and there are some awful teachers who literally don't even teach anything. I've known, because we were hired to solve the problems of the system. We had children that had entire years that were wasted because of staff changes with teachers and all. So don't, it's like we somehow, because we are so in it and we see every single moment, we don't see what goes on in the traditional classroom in America, whether it's public or private, we somehow think that they're getting everything done and that kids aren't falling behind and all of those things. And it's just, it's not true. It's not accepting reality. It's not accepting the reality of what learning is like. Learning is asynchronous. It's going to vary per child. And I know that a lot of moms, I was like this in the beginning, where I would get a curriculum and then I felt like a failure if that curriculum didn't work because it was according to my philosophy that I wanted to teach in. And just being able to let that go, and what I initially viewed as a liability or maybe a failure, I've now come to realize this is one of the major benefits of home education. We can make pivots. We should be making pivots. This is a customized learning environment that we are creating for our children. But yes, to answer your question about, do I switch curriculum? I often, when I am advising moms, I don't want moms to be constantly spending money on new curriculum. I try to figure out a way to make her investment work. And then until there comes a point, and most you can adapt pretty well, haven't you found most?
Oh, yes. Oh, definitely.
Yeah. you can adapt and then make a different change at the end of the year or at the end of the semester. So I, curriculum, you can really spend a lot of money on it. And so we want to avoid that, especially since there is no perfect curriculum. So we have to get out of that mindset. It's more of how we're implementing the curriculum that's going to make it work.
I think the faithful consistency that you do just a little bit every day is a lot more important than the specific. Most of the time, there are a few bad curriculum out there, but most of the time.
Like what, Amy? Spill it. I'm just kidding.
Not on the internet. No. Most of the time, if you just have faithful consistency, even the imperfect thing that you do just a little every day is going to end up working out. Yeah. Christy, this has been so much fun. We could just keep talking, but we should probably wrap it up. So here at the end, I'm going to ask you the question I ask all of my guests. And so the first is just, what are you personally reading lately?
Oh, I'm reading a great book right now. I'm reading Simplicity Parenting. Have you read that?
I have not. Who is the author?
Kim John Payne.
Okay.
I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I like to take the summer to, I always use the summertime. We do light school. We're year round homeschoolers, but we, you know how it is. We do light school in the summers. I always make it a point to step up my parenting game in some way, whether I'm taking a new course or reading a great book in parenting, because I have a little bit of a respite from the more longer academic days, homeschooling four kids. But his thesis is basically that society, and it's not a homeschool book, by the way, that society is waging a war on childhood, and that we need to reclaim childhoods. We're way too busy. We're raising our kids in an adult world that they're being exposed to adult things they're not ready for. They're highly overstimulated. And so he has kind of pillars of ways to simplify your home. But he is, he runs research. And so, for example, there's been studies of his where kids with pretty severe ADHD, their symptoms have been incredibly decreased simply by changing the child's environment, exposure to screens, not as much clutter, not as many toys. And I haven't read a parenting book like that before that has actual tangibles to do. And I'm very curious how, when I implement some of these things, how some of these tangible changes can change the mood in our home. But I'm really enjoying it. It's a good one.
I'll have to see if my library has that one. That one sounds very fascinating. Christy, the final question I have for you is, you've shared a lot of tips here, but if you had to summarize, pick one, your best tip for helping the homeschool day run more smoothly.
I can't handle that pressure.
It can be a best tip. It doesn't have to be the best tip.
Okay. All right. So if you are like me and you like to get things done and you like to have things planned out, I would say the first years of my homeschooling were extremely negative for me. I constantly felt behind. Always. I set up a schedule that was not realistic to implement. I decided how much time it should take my kids to do something. Well, who am I to decide? They're going to tell me. And there was this disconnect between how I thought things should go and how they actually were going. And it wasn't until I moved from, it's kind of really simple. I moved from accomplishing a certain amount of work or like a lesson per day to following Charlotte Mason's advice. I don't think she's right. There's now tons of studies that support her in this. I don't know if you knew that, in the short lessons, doing shorter lessons. So I would highly recommend that rather than, and by the way, because we know a lot of curriculum out there. We have used it for over 20 years. Curriculum writers, they don't write it in a way that's really conducive to implementing in our homeschool. So if we allocate 15 to 20 minutes to math and we want to get a lesson done, well, one day you might finish that lesson in 5 minutes and then you would have total anxiety because the way that lesson was written, it's going to take an hour and a half. And so what you said earlier, I think I just want to repeat that it's that incremental moving forward that is really powerful. And when I just considered it successful when we did the 15 minutes for my little kids and a little bit longer for my olders, when I embraced that, I started to love homeschooling more. And then the second thing is, in terms of, I love dreaming. I love helping moms create the homeschool of their dreams. When I first started, I wanted my kids to do composer study and memorize poetry and all of these things. But when I had twins, and then my youngest only 18 months after the twins, I'm trying to homeschool at the beginning at my oldest. By the time we got done with core subjects, I was exhausted. And I was like, all we did was reading, writing, and math. This is not why I'm homeschooling. And I remember getting really down because I was exhausted. So just shifting, and a lot of moms do this, just shifting to the things that breathe life for you, mama, and that are part of what this dream is, do those at a time of day where you have more energy. I move those to the beginning and it changed everything. And so I think that's why circle time, often people call it morning time, because it's those rich subjects that we want to do together. Doesn't have to happen in the morning, but it does for me, because if I've done read aloud and we've done some of our memory work all together, and then we go off to some of our individual subjects, I can feel like if we've just finished the morning time that we had a great day, like we could end it right there and I'd be happy. So I would, you know, and some people talk about doing rocks, pebbles,
like the jar where you fill the jar.
Yes. And I love that. Yes. I love that analogy. And I think that that is hugely successful. And then the third, I just can't help myself, getting your kids to be independent as early as possible in every way possible will be a gift to yourself. So I'm talking chores. I'm talking simple meals. I'm talking, take the time at the beginning of the year to set even your littler ones up. They don't even need to read in order to follow a checklist that has a picture next to it, so that you're not constantly, it gets to you when it's mom, where am I? What page? What's next? You can avoid that altogether by just as early as possible trying to get, which is what we want anyway. We want kids to take charge of their learning. We want to launch them out of our homes ready to learn whatever they need to learn and have the tools to do it. So that can start pretty early. Do you do that in your home?
We do. Yeah. And I think having the independence also really has great benefit when they're in their teen years and they're doing high school things or maybe dual enrollment things, moving into college. Like if you've sort of trained them little by little, it doesn't mean you just like, here, your 5-year-old, here's all your homework, and like, go do that. Of course not. But you're training them little by little. So when they're older, they really are able to take charge of their own education, which is really exciting. That's been very rewarding for me to see with my older ones. I wanted to say one thing, but we didn't want to forget with the first tip you gave about the time. This is one of the reasons why I often will actually, on our weekly homeschool planning chart, I won't assign specific pages or chapters. Mm-hmm. I'll actually assign it by time, because you might have one child that really struggles to read. And so it's really hard work. They can't read very many pages a day. But if I say, okay, well, I want you to read with your eyeballs, because we do a lot of reading with your ears. If I say, I want you to read with your eyeballs for 30 minutes,
I love that.
You know, okay, it doesn't matter how many pages you read. And then the child who's struggling doesn't feel like overwhelmed. This will never end. They know, okay, however much I can do in 30 minutes, I can do. And that really works well with other subjects too. You can assign like, okay, do one chapter in math or 45 minutes, whichever comes first.
Yes.
Because if it's really, really challenging, you might need 2 days. But guess what? That's why we homeschool. We can take 2 days on the math lesson, you know? No homeschool police will come for you. But then if you finish it quickly, the kid feels like they kind of gamed the system. Like, ooh, I finished my math faster than the assigned time today.
Yes.
So it's a really great, useful tip, I think, both for children who can go more quickly and for children who are struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Christy, where can people find you all around the internet?
Well, they can find me all around the internet, but the best place to go is christyfaith.com, but there's a dash. It's christy-faith.com. www.christyfaith.com. And if you go there, you can find, it's like a web. You can go everywhere if you go there first.
Perfect. I will have that link in the show notes for this episode over at humilityanddoxology.com. And if you have enjoyed this episode today, I would love for you to share it with a friend. You know, word of mouth is a great way to spread the encouragement that you get every week in your earbuds from Homeschool Conversations. I am so delighted to each of you who has joined us today. And Christy, it has been really fun to get to know you a little bit more. So thanks so much for coming, and I hope to chat with you again soon.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening in on this week's Homeschool Conversation. For show notes and links to all the resources we discussed, head to humilityanddoxology.com/homeschool-conversations. And if these episodes are an encouragement to you, would you take a moment to leave a rating and review and to share with your friends? I am so thankful that you are here on this adventure with me. Let's repent of our constant striving, relish the joy of learning, and rest in the work of Christ on our behalf. Stand fast, my friends.